The gates slammed shut. This time, they didn't lock Sereni in Elantris, but out of it.
Get your hands off of me!
Emotions snapped at her soul like a pack of angry wolves, each one demanding her attention. 5 days before, she had thought her life ruined. She had wished, prayed, and begged for Domai to heal her. Now she found herself craving to return to her damnation, as long as Spirit was there. Domai, however, had made the decision for her. Spirit was right. She could no more live in Elantris than he could exist outside of the city. The worlds and the demands of their flesh were far too different. A hand fell on her shoulder.
Yardeth has preserved you, Princess.
I don't know how you did this, Priest, but I know one thing with absolute certainty. I owe your god nothing.
Your father thinks differently, Princess.
For a man whose religion claims to spread truth, Priest, your lies are strikingly vulgar.
Lies? Why don't you go and speak with him? In a way, it could be said that you gave us Teyun. Convert the king, and often you convert the kingdom as well.
Impossible!
You fought with wisdom and cleverness, Princess. But true wisdom knows when further fighting is pointless. I have Teyun, and Arelon will soon be mine as well. Do not be like the Stonelock, ever trying to dig a pit in the sand's wet beaches, and ever having your work destroyed by the tide. Embrace Shudareth, and let your efforts become more than vanity.
I will die first.
You already have. And I brought you back.
Prathan took a step forward, and Sereni shied back, pulling her hands up against her chest. Steel whipped in the sunlight, and suddenly the point of Eondel's sword was at Raythan's neck. Sereni felt herself enfolded in enormous, powerful arms.
Blessed be Domai's name!
Blessed be Yadith's name!
The tip of the sword was still pressed against the Giorn's flesh.
Domai left this one to rot.
Say no more, priest!
Then, moving more quickly than Sereni's eyes could track, the Giorn bent backward and pulled his head out of the sword's range. He kicked at the same time, smashing his foot into Eondel's hand and knocking the weapon free. Braithen spun, blood-red hand plucking the sword from the air. He snapped its tip against the cobblestones. He dropped the now useless hilt to the ground.
Time moves like a mountain, Sereni. It comes so slowly that most don't even notice its passing. It will, however, crush those who don't move before it.
Kaiyan watched Raythan go, hatred in his eyes. Finally, he turned to Eondel.
Come, General. Let's take Sereni home to rest.
There's no time for rest, Uncle. I need you to gather our allies. We must meet as soon as possible.
There will be time enough for that later, Eni. You're in no condition.
I've had a fine vacation, Uncle, but there's work to be done. Perhaps when it's finished, I'll be able to escape back to Elantris. For now, we need to worry about stopping Tel'Rai'i from giving our country to Wern. Send messengers to Ro'ail and Ahane. I want to meet with them as soon as possible.
Her uncle's face looked utterly dumbfounded.
Well, she seems all right.
The cooks in her father's household had learned one thing. When Sereni wanted to eat, she could eat. She had just finished her fourth plate.
You'd better move faster, cousin. You look like you almost had time to taste that one.
Sereni ignored him, motioning for Kaiyan to bring in the next delicacy. Sereni sat at the table across from Lukel and Ro'ail. The elderly Duke had just arrived, and when he had seen Sereni, she had thought for a moment he was going to collapse from the shock. Instead, he had breathed a prayer to Domai, seating himself speechlessly in the chair across from her.
I can honestly say that I have never seen a woman eat this much.
She's a Teoish giantess. I don't think it's fair to make comparisons between Sereni and regular women.
If I weren't so busy eating, I'd respond to that.
Sereni hadn't realized exactly how hungry she was until she'd entered Kaiyan's kitchen, where the lingering sense of past banquets hung in the air like a delectable fog. She was only now appreciating how useful it was to have a world-traveled chef as an uncle. Kaiyan entered with a pan of semi-boiling meat and vegetables in a red sauce.
It's Jindoese Rei Domo Mai. The name means meat with fiery skin. You're fortunate I had the proper ingredients. The Jindo Rei del Pepper had a poor crop last season, and...
Serini began heaping meat onto her plate.
You don't care, do you? I could have boiled it in dishwater, and it would be the same to you.
I understand, Uncle. You suffer for your art.
Kaiyan sat down, looking at the empty dishes scattered across the table.
Well, you certainly inherited the family appetite.
She's a big girl. It takes a lot of fuel to keep that body going.
Serini shot him a look between bites.
Is she slowing down at all? I'm running out of supplies.
Actually, I think this should about do it. You don't understand what it was like in there, gentlemen. I did actually enjoy myself, but there wasn't a lot of food to be had.
I'm surprised there was any at all.
Elantrians like to eat, but they don't actually need to, so they can afford to stockpile.
Whatever the conditions, Princess, we thank Domai for your safe return.
It isn't as miraculous as it seems, Roile. Did anyone count how many days Wraithen was in Elantris?
4 or 5.
I'd be willing to bet it was 5 days. Exactly the same amount of time it took me to get thrown in and then be healed.
The Gion had something to do with this. Have you spoken with your father yet?
No. I'm going to do that soon.
A few moments later, Eondel entered, Shuden in tow. The young Jindo had been out riding with Tarine. As he entered, the Baron's face broke into an uncharacteristically wide smile.
We should have known you'd be back, Serini. If anyone could be sent to hell and return untouched, it would be you.
Not exactly untouched.
Serini raised her hand to feel her bald scalp.
Did you find anything?
Here, my lady.
Eondel held out a short blonde wig.
It was the best I could find. Most of the others felt so thick I would have sworn they were made of horsehair.
Serini looked over the wig with a critical eye. It would barely come down to her shoulders. But it was better than baldness. In her estimation, her hair was the greatest loss incurred by her exile. It was going to take years to grow it to a decent length again.
Too bad no one gathered up my own hair.
We didn't exactly anticipate your return, cousin. It was probably still attached to your veil when we burned it.
Burned it?
Aerilish custom, Eni. When someone is thrown into Elantris, we burn their possessions.
Everything?
I'm afraid so.
Oh, never mind. Where's Ahain?
At Telraiai's palace.
What's he doing there?
We figured we should send someone, at least, to make an overture to the new king. We're going to have to work with him, so we might as well see what kind of cooperation we can expect.
Serini eyed her companions. Despite their obvious joy at seeing her, she sensed something in their expressions. Defeat. They had worked so hard to keep Telraiai off the throne, and they had failed.
You speak as if there weren't anything we could do about Telraiai's claim of the throne.
What could we do? Telraiai's been crowned, and the nobility supports him.
So does Wern. Sending Ahain is a good idea, but I doubt you'll find any leniency in Telraiai's reign. For us, or for the rest of Aerilan. My lords, Rheodon should have been king, and I am his wife. I feel responsible for his people. They suffered under Iaedon. If Telraiai turns this kingdom over to Wern, then Aerilan will become nothing more than another Fjordel province.
What are you implying, Serini?
That we take action against Telraiai. Any action we can.
This is different from what we were doing before, Serini. We opposed Iaedon, but we did not plan to remove him. If we take direct action against Telraiai, then we will be traitors to the crown.
Traitors to the crown, but not the people. In Teod, we respect the king because he protects us. It is a bargain, a formal agreement. Iaedon did nothing to protect Aerilan. He built no army to keep Fjordan away. He devised no legal system to ensure that his subjects were treated fairly. And he did nothing to care for the spiritual welfare of his nation. My instincts warn me that Telraiai will be even worse.
I don't know, Serini. Aedon overthrew the Elantrians to seize his power. And now you suggest that we do the same thing. How much of this can a country stand before it breaks apart?
How much of wraith and string-pulling do you think it can stand?
The gathered lords looked at each other.
Let us sleep on it, Serini. You speak of difficult matters. Ones that should not be entered into without careful meditation.
Agreed.
The lords nodded, rising to go their separate ways. Rawael hung back for a moment.
Looks as if there is no reason to continue our betrothal, is there, Serini?
I don't think so, my lord. If we take the throne now, it'll be through force, not manipulation of politics.
Ah, it was far too good to be true anyway, my dear. Good night, then.
Good night.
Three engagements and no weddings. She was amassing a poor track record indeed.
Uncle, Telrai has moved into the palace, and my things have been burned. I find myself suddenly without lodgings. Might I accept your offer of 2 months ago and move in here?
My wife would be seriously annoyed if you don't, Edie. She spent the last hour preparing a room for you.
Serini sat on her new bed, wearing one of her aunt's nightgowns. Her legs were pulled tightly against her chest, and her bowed head was sorrowful. Aishi fuzzed for a moment, her father's face disappearing as the Seon returned to his normal shape.
I am so sorry, my lady.
Serini nodded, her bald head rubbing against her knees. Wraithen had not been lying. He hadn't even been exaggerating. Her father had converted to Shu Dareth. The ceremony hadn't been performed yet. There were no Dorethi priests in Teod. However, it was apparent that as soon as Wraithen finished with Aerilon, he intended to travel to her homeland and personally collect her father's formal oath. The oath would place Eventeo at the bottom of the Dorethi hierarchy, forcing him to submit to the whims of even a simple priest. No amount of raving or explaining had changed her father's resolve. Eventeo was an honest man. He had sworn to Wraithen that if Serini returned safely, he would convert. It didn't matter that the Giorn's trickery was behind both her curse and restoration. The king would honor his promise. And where Eventeo led, Teod would follow. It would take time, of course. The people of Teod were not sheep. However, as the Artheths flooded her homeland, the people would give ear where they would have given only fists before, all because they knew that their king was Dorethi. Teod had been changed forever. And he had done it for her. Of course, he claimed that he also knew it was best for the country. No matter how good Teod's navy was, sheer numbers ensured that a determined Fjordal campaign would eventually punch through the armada. Eventeo claimed he would not fight a hopeless war.
Yet this is the same man who instructed me that principle was always worth fighting to protect. The man who swore that truth was immutable and that no battle, even a hopeless one, was in vain when defending what is right.
But apparently his love was stronger than truth. Teod would fall because of her, becoming just another Fjordal state, its king little more than Wern's servant. Eventeo implied that she should lead Aerilon to do as he had done, though she could tell from his voice that he was proud when she refused.
I will protect Aerilon and Elantris. I will struggle for the survival of her religion because Aerilon, poor, sickly Aerilon, is now Shukorath's final sanctuary.
Wraithen sat in the palace waiting room with growing dissatisfaction. Around him, the signs of a changing government were already evident. It seemed remarkable that one man could own so many tapestries, rugs, and brocades. Wraithen sat near the stone hearth, jaw clenched, as he regarded the assembled nobility. As could be expected, Telrai had quite suddenly become a very busy man. Every nobleman, landholder, and ambitious merchant in the city wanted to pay his respects to the new king. Hrafn could not believe he was being forced to wait. It was maddening, it was discourteous, and it was unbelievable. Yet Hrafn had no choice but to endure it. Backed by Wern's power, though he was, he had no troops, no might to force Telrai's hand. He could not denounce the man openly, despite his frustration. Hrafn's political instinct was too keen to let him do something like that. He had worked hard to get a potential sympathizer on the throne. Only a fool would let his own pride ruin such an opportunity. Hrafn would wait, tolerating disrespect, for a short time, to achieve the eventual prize. An attendant entered the room, draped in fine silks, the exaggerated livery of Telrai's heralds.
Bjorn Hrafn!
Hrafn stood and brushed past the other nobleman with a dismissive step. It was about time. Telrai waited beyond. Hrafn paused just inside the door, regarding the chamber with displeasure. The room had once been Iadon's study, and at that time it had been marked by a businessman's efficiency. Everything had been well placed and orderly. The furniture had been comfortable without being lavish. Telrai had changed that. Attendants stood at the sides of the room, and beside them sat carts heaped with exotic foods purchased from the merchants of the Aireline market. Telrai reclined in a massive pile of cushions and silks, a pleasant smile on his purple birthmarked face. Rugs coated the floor, and tapestries overlapped one another on the walls.
The men I am forced to work with.
Ah, Hrafn, welcome.
Your Majesty, I was hoping we could speak in private.
Very well.
Telrai waved his hand, dismissing the attendants. They left, pulling the outer doors closed.
Now, why have you come? Are you interested in the tariffs on your merchants setting up for the Aireline market?
I have more important matters to consider, Your Majesty. As do you. I have come to collect on the promises of our allegiance.
But promises? Hrafn, I made no promises.
You are to join the Dorethi religion. That was the deal.
I made no such deal, Hrafn. You offered me funds. I accepted them. You have my gratitude for the support, as I said that you would.
I will not squabble with you, merchant. I am no sycophant to be baited. If you do not do as Yadit expects, then I will find someone else. Do not forget what happened to your predecessor.
Oh, don't take credit for something you had no hand in, priest. Idon's fall was, as I recall, caused by the Teoish princess. You were an Elantris at the time. Now, if Jordan wishes a Dorethi on the throne of Aerilon, that can probably be arranged. There will be, however, a price.
Very well. How much?
However, it is not a price you can pay.
Excuse me?
Yes. My price must be paid by someone with a little more authority than yourself. You see, I've learned that Dorethi priests cannot appoint men to their own position in the church hierarchy.
You can't possibly be serious.
I know more than you assume, Hrafn. You think me a fool, ignorant of the ways of the East. Kings bow to Geons. What power will I hold if I let you make me into nothing more than a Dorethi slave? No, that will not do for me. I don't plan to bow any time one of your priests come to visit. I will convert to your religion, but I will do so only with the promise of an ecclesiastical rank to match my civil one. Not just King Telrai, but Gion Telrai.
Hrafn shook his head in wonder. How easily this man claimed that he was not ignorant of the ways of the East, yet even Fjordal children knew enough doctrine to laugh at such a ridiculous suggestion.
My Lord Telrai, you have no idea.
I said, Hrafn, that there is nothing you can do for me. I have sought to deal with a higher power.
What are you saying?
Wern, I sent him a messenger several days ago, informing him of my demand. You are no longer necessary, Hrafn. You may withdraw.
Raythan stood, stunned. The man had sent a letter to Wern himself? Telrai had made demands of the regent of all creation?
You are a foolish, foolish man.
Raythan fully realized the severity of his problems. When Wern received that message...
Go!
Slightly dazed, Raythan did as commanded. At first, Raoden stayed away from the library because it reminded him of her. Then he found himself drawn back to it because it reminded him of her. Instead of thinking about his loss, Raoden focused on the connection Serini had made. He studied aeon after aeon, noticing other features of the landscape in their forms.
Aeon Eno, the character for water, a wiggling line that matches the meanderings of the Eridel River. The character for wood, Aeon Dii, includes several circles that represent the southern forests. The aeons are maps of the land, each one a slightly different rendering of the same general picture. Each one has the three basic lines, the coastline, the mountain line, and the dot for Lake Elono. Many often have a line at the bottom to represent the Kolomo River, which separates Eirilon from Dúladel. Why does Aeon Mie have an X that crosses somewhere in the middle of the Aeon County? Why is Aeon Rai-I specked with two dozen seemingly random dots?
The answers might have been held in one of the library's tomes, but so far he had found nothing in the way of an explanation. The door attacked him at least twice a day now. Each battle seemed like it would be his last, and each time he seemed a little weaker when the fight was through, as if his energy were a finite well, dribbling a little lower with each confrontation. The question was not whether he would fall or not, but whether he would find the secret before he did. Raoden pounded the map with frustration. 5 days had passed since Serini's departure, and he still couldn't find the answer. He was beginning to feel that he would continue for eternity, agonizingly close to the secret of Aeon Dor, yet forever unable to find it. The large map now hung from the wall near his desk. Its edges were worn with age, and the ink was beginning to fade. The map had lived through Elantris's glory and collapse.
If only you could speak.
Raoden sat down in Serini's chair. He leaned back in the chair and began to draw, seeking solace in the aeons. He had recently moved on to a new, more advanced Aeon Dor technique. The texts explained that aeons were more powerful when drawn with attention not only to line length and slant, but line width as well. While they would still work if the lines were all the same width, variants in the proper locations added extra control and strength. So Raoden practiced as they instructed, using his fifth finger to draw small lines and his thumb to construct larger ones. But the aeons still had their same effect, regardless of whether they were drawn in the air or smelted from steel. His practice was futile. It didn't matter how efficient his aeons were. None of them worked.
Why do I even bother?
Galadon entered the room.
Raseon just stopped by again, Sul.
Is he still here?
He left almost immediately. He wanted me to tell you that she's finally convinced the lords to rebel against King Telrai.
Serini had been sending her Seon to give them daily reports of her activities, a service that was a mixed blessing. Raoden knew he should listen to what was happening on the outside, but he longed for the stress-free relative ignorance of before.
Did Aishi say when the next supply dump would come?
Tonight.
Good. Did he say if she would come herself?
Same stipulations as before, Sul.
Raoden nodded, keeping the melancholy out of his face. He didn't know what means Serini was using to deliver the supplies, but for some reason, Raoden and the others weren't allowed to retrieve the boxes until after their deliverers had gone.
Stop moping. Sul, it doesn't suit you. It takes a fine sense of pessimism to brood with any sort of respectability.
I'm sorry. It just seems that no matter how hard I push against our problems, they just push back equally.
Still no progress with Aeon Dor?
No, I checked older maps with new ones, looking for changes in the coasts or the mountain range, but nothing seems to have changed. I've tried drawing the basic lines with slightly different slants, but that's fruitless. The lines won't appear unless I put them at exactly the right slant, the same slant as always. Even the lake is in the same place, unchanged. I can't see what is different.
Maybe none of the basic lines have changed, Sul. Perhaps something needs to be added.
I considered that, but what? I know of no new rivers or lakes, and there certainly aren't any new mountains in Aeolon.
Raoden finished his Aeon. Aeon Ihe, with a dissatisfied stroke of his thumb. He looked at the Aeon center, the core that represented Aeralon and its features. Nothing had changed, except...
The chasm!
The chasm? That was caused by the Rio Tsul, not the other way around.
But what if it wasn't? What if the earthquake came just before the Rio? It caused the crack to the south, and suddenly all of the Aeons were invalid. They all needed an extra line to function. All of Aeon Dor, and therefore Elantris, would have fallen immediately.
Raoden focused on the Aeon hanging just before him. With a hesitant hand, he swiped his finger across the glowing character in an approximation of where the chasm stood. Nothing happened. No line appeared. The Aeon flashed and disappeared.
I guess that is that, Sul.
No.
Raoden's fingers whipped and spun. He moved with a speed even he hadn't realized he'd achieved, recreating the Aeon in a matter of seconds. He paused at the end, hand hovering at the bottom, below the three basic lines. He could almost feel. He stabbed the Aeon and slashed his finger through the air, and a small line streaked across the Aeon behind it. The door attacked with a roaring surge of power, and this time it hit no wall. It exploded through Raoden like a river. Raoden basked in its power. For just a moment, it burst free, like a beast that had been kept trapped in a small space for far too long. It almost seemed joyful.
Sul!
Raoden shook his head, unable to explain. His toe still burned. He was still an Elantrian, but the door had been freed. He had fixed something. His Aeon, the one he had drawn before him, was glowing brightly.
Galadon, get down!
What have you done, Zeus?
A thin prick of red light appeared in the disc's center, then expanded. The Aeon became a twisting vortex of fire. Raoden could feel the heat as he stumbled back. It burst, spitting out a horizontal column of flame through the air, just above Galadon's head. The column crashed into a bookshelf. A few burning scraps of paper fluttered to the ground. All that was left of the bookcase was a smoldering pile of charcoal.
What was that?
I think I just destroyed the biology section.
Next time, Sul, I recommend that you not test your theories with Aeon Ihe. Golo?
Galadon set down a pile of mostly burned books. They had spent the last hour cleaning up the library, making certain they doused any smoldering flame.
Agreed. That just happened to be the one I was practicing. It wouldn't have been so dramatic if I hadn't put so many modifiers on it.
Galadon looked back over the library. A dark scar still marred the place of the incinerated bookcase, and several piles of half-charred tomes lay scattered around the room.
Shall we try another?
As long as no fire is involved.
Raoden raised his hand to begin Aeon Eishi. He finished the character's double box shape and added the chasm line. The lines turned red at first, then, like metal in a forge, turned a bright white. The color stabilized, bathing the area in a soft luminescence.
It works, Sul, by Dolakin. You actually did it.
Raoden nodded with excitement. He approached the Aeon hesitantly, putting his hand up against it. There was no heat, just as the books had explained.
It's not as bright as it should be.
How can you be sure?
This is the first one you've seen work.
An Aeon Eishi this big should be powerful enough to light the entire library. It's barely as bright as a lantern.
Raoden reached up, tapping the Aeon in the center. The glow faded immediately. The Aeon's lines vanishing one at a time, as if some invisible finger were undrawing them. Then he drew another Aeon Eishi, this time including all the power-increasing modifiers he knew. The Aeon appeared slightly brighter than the first one, but nowhere near as powerful as it should have been.
Something is still wrong. That Aeon should be too bright for us to look at it.
You think the chasm line is wrong?
No, it was obviously a large part of the problem. Aeon door works now, but it's handicapped and powered. There must be something else. Another line, perhaps, that we need to add.
Galadon glanced down at his arms. Even against the dark brown doula skin, it was easy to make out his sickly Elantrian's blotches.
Try a healing Aeon Sul.
Raoden traced Aeon Ayin in the air. He added a modification, stipulating Galadon's body as the target, as well as all three power-increasing marks. He finished with the small chasm line.
Do you feel anything?
No.
Then, raising his arm, Galadon inspected the cut on his elbow. An injury caused just the other day when he slipped in one of the fields. It was unchanged.
The pain is still there, Sul. And my heart does not beat.
That Aeon didn't behave properly. It disappeared like before when we didn't know about the chasm line. The door couldn't find a target for its power.
Then what good is it, Sul? We'll still rot in this city.
It isn't useless, Galadon. We have the power of the Elantrians. Some of it might not work, but that might just be because we haven't experimented enough. Think about it. This is the power that gave Elantris its beauty, the power that fed all of Aerilon. Don't give up hope when we're so close.
No one can give up when you're around, Sul. You utterly refuse to let a man despair.
As they tried more Aeons, it became more apparent that something was still blocking the door. They made a stack of papers float, but not an entire book. They turned one of the walls blue, then changed it back. And Raoden managed to convert a small pile of charcoal into a few grains of corn. The results were encouraging, but many Aeons failed completely. Any Aeon, for instance, that targeted either of them flashed away ineffectually. Their clothing was a valid target, but their flesh was not. Raoden broke off the tip of his thumbnail and tried to make that float, and was completely unsuccessful.
Our bodies are frozen in the middle of being changed, Galadon.
Raoden watched a sheet of paper hover in front of him, then burst into flames. Linked Aeons appeared to work.
The Shayot hasn't finished with us. Whatever's keeping the Aeons from reaching their full potential is also stopping us from becoming true Elantrians. Until our transformation is finished, it appears that no Aeons can affect us.
I still don't understand that first explosion, Sul. It seemed so powerful. Why hasn't anything else worked that well?
I'm not sure.
A few moments earlier, he had hesitantly redrawn Aeon Ihe with the same modifications, creating the complex rune that was supposed to form another column of flame. Instead, the Aeon had barely sputtered out enough fire to warm a cup of tea. He suspected that the first explosion had something to do with the door's surge through him, an expression of its long-awaited freedom.
Perhaps there was some sort of buildup in the door, like a pocket of gas trapped in the top of a cave. The first Aeon I drew drained that reserve.
Galadon shrugged. There was just so much they didn't understand. Raoden sat for a moment, eyes falling on one of his tomes. A thought occurring. He rushed over to his stack of Aeon door books, selecting a large volume that contained nothing but page after page of Aeon diagrams. Galadon followed with a grumpy expression, peeking over his shoulder at the page Raoden chose. The Aeon was extensive and complex. Raoden had to take several steps to the side as he drew it, the modifications and stipulations going far beyond the central Aeon. His arm ached by the time he had finished, and the construction hung in the air like a wall of glowing lines. Then it began to gleam, and the sheet of inscriptions twisted, turning, and wrapping around Raoden.
Soon, what's happened?
Raoden could tell from the startled look on Galadon's face that he had been successful.
Soul, you've done it! You've healed yourself!
I'm afraid not. It's only an illusion.
Raoden held up his hands, which were still gray and spotted with black. His face, however, was different. He walked over, regarding his reflection in a polished plaque on the end of a bookshelf. The garbled image showed an unfamiliar face. It was free from spots, true, but it didn't look anything like his real face had before the Sheod had taken him.
An illusion?
It's based on Aeon Sheol. There's so many things mixed in that, the base Aeon is almost irrelevant.
But it shouldn't work on you. I thought we decided the Aeons couldn't target Elantrans.
It doesn't. It targets my shirt. The illusion is like an article of clothing. It only covers up my skin. It doesn't change anything.
Then what good is it?
It is going to get us out of Elantris, my friend.
What took you so long?
I couldn't find spirit, my lady.
Aishi floated into her carriage window.
So I had to deliver the message to Master Galadon. After that, I went to check on King Tarayai.
How is he doing, then?
Galadon or the king, my lady?
The king!
Oh, his majesty is quite busy, lounging in his palace while half of Aerilon's nobility waits outside. I believe that his largest current complaint is that there aren't enough young women left on the palace staff.
We've exchanged one idiot for another. How did that man ever acquire enough wealth to become a duke?
He didn't, my lady. His brother did most of the work. Tarayai inherited upon the man's death.
Is Hraithen there?
Often, my lady. Apparently, he visits the king on a daily basis.
What are they waiting for? Why doesn't Tarayai just convert?
No one is certain, my lady.
The continued game left Serene baffled. It was well known that Tarayai had attended Dorethi meetings, and there was no reason for him to maintain an illusion of Karathi conservatism.
No new news on that proclamation that Gion has supposedly drafted?
No, my lady.
Rumors claimed that Hraithen had drawn up a bill that would force all of Aerilon to convert to Shudareth or face incarceration. Though the merchants put on a face of normalcy, holding the spring Aeriline market, the entire city was on edge with a sense of tense anxiety. Serene could easily imagine the future. Soon, Wern would send a fleet of priests into Aerilon, followed closely by his warrior monks. Telrai, at first a sympathizer, then a convert, would eventually become less than a pawn. In just a few years, Aerilon wouldn't be just a country of Dorethi believers, but a virtual extension of Fjordin itself. Once Hraithen's bill passed, the priest would waste no time in arresting Serene and the others. They would be locked away, or more likely, executed. After that, there would be no one to oppose Fjordin. The entire civilized world would belong to Wern, a final fulfillment of the old empire's dream. And yet, despite all of this, her allies debated and talked. None of them believed that Telrai would actually sign a document forcing conversion. Such atrocities didn't happen in their world. Aerilon was a peaceful kingdom. Even the so-called riots of a decade past hadn't been that destructive. Unless one was an Elantrian. Her friends wanted to move carefully. Their caution was understandable, laudable even, but their timing was terrible. It was a good thing she had an opportunity to practice fencing this day. She needed to release a little aggression. As if in response to her thoughts, the carriage pulled to a halt in front of Roile's manor. In the wake of Telrai's move into the palace, the women had relocated their fencing practice to the old Duke's gardens. Sereni had been surprised when the women insisted they continue the fencing practice. However, the ladies had shown strength in their resolve. This one meeting would continue every second day, as it had for over a month now. Apparently, Sereni wasn't the only one who needed an opportunity to work out her frustration with a sword. Sereni was dressed in her usual white jumpsuit and wearing her new wig. With shade and a wooden floor, Roile's garden pavilion was a perfect place for practice. Most of the women had already arrived, and they greeted Sereni with smiles and curtsies. None of them had quite gotten over her sudden return from Elantris. Now, they regarded her with even more respect and fear than they had before. Sereni nodded back with polite affection. She liked these women, even if she could never be one of them. Seeing them, however, reminded her of the strange loss she still felt at having left Elantris behind. It wasn't just spirit. Elantris was the one place where she could remember feeling unconditional acceptance. She had not been a princess. She had been something far better, a member of a community where every individual was vital. She had felt warmth from those motley-skinned Elantrians, a willingness to accept her into their lives and give her part of themselves. There, in the center of the most cursed city in the world, Spirit had constructed a society that exemplified Karathi teachings. Sereni wasn't sure how long she practiced. She fell into her forms easily once the warm-ups were finished. Her thoughts rotated around Elantris, Domai, her feelings, and the indecipherable ironies of life. She was sweating heavily by the time she realized the other women had stopped sparring. Sereni looked up with surprise. Everyone was huddled at one side of the pavilion, surrounding a man. He was dressed in fine blue and green silks, a feathered hat on his head. He had the creamy brown skin of a Duladan aristocrat. Not as dark as Shuten's, but not as light as Sereni's. His features were round and happy, and he had a foppish, unconcerned air. Duladan, indeed. The dark-skinned servant at his side was massive and bulky, like most doulas of lower birth. She had never seen either man before.
What's going on here?
His name is Kalu, my lady. He arrived a few moments ago. Apparently, he's one of the few Duladan Republicans that escaped the massacre last year. He's been hiding in southern Avalon until just recently, when he heard that King Aedon was looking for a man to take Baron Edain's holdings.
Sereni frowned. Something about the man bothered her. The doula noticed Sereni.
Ah, this must be Princess Sereni. They say you are the most fair woman in all of Opalon.
You should not believe all the things that people say, my lord.
No, only the ones that are true.
Despite herself, Sereni started to blush. She did not like men who could do that to her.
I'm afraid you've caught us off guard, my lord. We've been exercising quite vigorously and are in no position to receive you like proper ladies.
I apologize for my abrupt arrival, your highness. Upon arriving in this glorious city, I first paid my respects to the palace, but was told that I would have to wait for at least a week to see the king himself. I put my name on the lists, then had my coachman drive me around your lovely city. I had heard of the illustrious Duke Roile and decided to pay him a visit. Oh, how surprised I was to find all these lovelies in his gardens.
Sereni's rebuttal was interrupted by the arrival of Duke Roile. Apparently, the old man had finally realized that his property had been invaded by a roving doula. As the Duke approached, Kalu gave another one of his silly bows, sweeping his large, floppy hat out in front of him, then quickly hurried off to meet the aged Duke.
Ah, Duke Roile, it is so good
I
to finally
like
meet you,
well,
my lord.
Of course not, my lady. You have never gotten along very well with Duladan aristocrats.
It's more than that. Something about him seems false. He doesn't have an accent.
Public citizens spoke Aeonic quite fluently, especially if they lived near the border. I have met several Dulas in my time without hint of an accent.
Sereni just frowned. As she watched the man perform, she realized what it was. Kalu was too stereotypical. He represented everything a Duladan aristocrat was said to be. Foolishly haughty, overdressed and overmannered, and completely indifferent when it came to just about everything. This Kalu was like a cliché that shouldn't exist, a living representation of the idealized Duladan noble. Sereni decided that it was time to put this doula to a little test.
You can imagine my surprise when I arrived to your great land to find the king dead and the kingdom in an uproar.
Perhaps my lord would care to join us.
Join you?
Sereni could sense a break in character as he reoriented himself. She was becoming increasingly certain that this man was not who he claimed.
Of course, my lord. Duladan citizens are said to be the finest fencers in all the land, better even than Jaedorians. I'm certain the ladies here would be much intrigued to see a true master at work.
I am very thankful at the offer, your gracious highness, but I am hardly dressed.
We will make it a quick bout, my lord.
Sereni picked up her bag and slid out her two finest sires, the ones with sharpened points rather than simple balls.
All right. Let us have a bout, then.
Sereni stopped, trying to judge whether he was bluffing. She hadn't intended to actually fight him. Otherwise, she wouldn't have chosen the dangerous blades. She considered for a moment, and then, with a casual shrug, tossed him one of the weapons. Kalu pulled off his bright turquoise jacket, revealing the ruffled green shirt underneath. Then, surprisingly, he fell into a fencing stance, his hand raised behind him. The tip of his sire raised offensively.
All right.
Kalu jumped backward at the onslaught, twirling around the stunned Duke Roile as he parried Sereni's blows. Sereni pushed through the man's attacks, snapping her blade at the offending doula. Soon, Sereni emerged into the sunlight, jumping off a wooden dais and landing in the soft grass.
Please, do be careful of my god!
The doula was surprisingly good, but he was no master. He spent too much time parrying her attacks, obviously unable to do much but defend. They moved all the way across the courtyard, Kalu retreating a few steps with each new exchange. He seemed surprised when he stepped onto brick instead of grass, arriving at the fountain centerpiece of Relial's gardens. Sereni advanced more vigorously as Kalu stumbled up onto the brick deck. She forced him back until his thigh struck the edge of the fountain itself. There was nowhere else for him to go. Or so she thought. She watched with surprise as the doula leapt into the water. With a kick of his leg, he sent a splash in her direction, then leapt out of the fountain to her right. Sereni's sire pierced the water as Kalu passed through the air beside her. She felt the tip of her blade strike something soft. Sereni spun, raising her blade to strike again. But Kalu was on his knee. His sire stuck point first into the soft earth. He held up a bright flower to Sereni.
Ah, my lady, you have found my secret. Never have I been able to face a beautiful woman in combat. My heart melts, my knees shake, and my sword refuses to strike.
He bowed his head, proffering the flower. Sereni lowered her sword uncertainly. Where had he gotten the flower? She hesitantly accepted the gift. They both knew that his excuse was nothing more than a sneaky method of escaping embarrassment, but Sereni had to respect his cleverness. He had not only managed to avoid looking like a fool, but had impressed the women with his courtly sense of romance at the same time. Sereni studied the man closely, searching for a wound. She'd been certain her blade had scratched him on the face as he jumped out of the fountain, but there was no sign of a hit. Uncertain, she looked down at the tip of her sire. There was no blood on it. He must have missed, after all.
Come now, Citizen Kalu. You must be exhausted after that exhilarating performance. Let's go get you a cool drink of water.
The women began to urge the dandy back toward the pavilion. As he left, Kalu looked back at her and smiled. Not the silly, foppish smile he had used before, but a more knowing, sly smile. a smile she found strikingly familiar for some reason. He performed another one of his ridiculous bows, then allowed himself to be led away. The market's tents were a bright burst of color in the center of the city. Prathan walked among them, noting the unsold wares and empty streets with dissatisfaction. Many of the merchants were from the east, and they had spent a great deal of money shipping their cargoes to Aerilon for the spring market. If they failed to sell their goods, the losses would be a financial blow from which they might never recover. Most of the merchants, displaying dark Fjordel colorings, bowed their heads respectfully at his passing. Raithan had been away so long, first in Duladel, then in Aerilon, that he had almost forgotten what it was like to be treated with proper deference. Even as they bowed their heads, Raithan could see something in these merchants' eyes, an edginess. They had planned for this market for months, their wares and passage purchased long before King Iadon's death. Even with the upheaval, they had no choice but to try and sell what they could. Prathan moved with purpose, displaying a confidence he didn't feel, trying to give the merchants some measure of security. Things were not well, not at all. His hurried call via Seon to Wern had come too late. Telrai's message had already arrived. Fortunately, Wern had displayed only slight anger at Telrai's presumptuousness. Time was short. Wern had indicated that he had little patience for fools, and he would never, of course, name a foreigner to the title of Giorn. Yet, Prathan's subsequent meetings with Telrai had not gone well. Though he seemed to be a bit more reasonable than he had been the day he tossed Raithan out, the king still resisted all suggestions of monetary compensation. His lethargy to convert gave mixed signs to the rest of Aerilon. The empty market was a manifestation of the Aerilish nobility's confused state. Suddenly, they weren't certain if it were better to be a Dorethi sympathizer or not, so they simply hid. Balls and parties slowed. The men hesitated to visit the markets, instead waiting to see what their monarch would do. Everything hung on Telrai's decision.
It will come. I still have a month left. I still have time to persuade or threaten if need be. Telrai will come to understand the foolishness of his request, and he will convert.
Prathan paused as he saw a flutter of movement near a tent at his side. The tent was a large blue structure with extravagant embroidery and large wing-like pavilions to the sides. The breeze brought hints of spice and smoke. An incense merchant. Prathan frowned. He was certain he had seen the distinctive blood red of a Dorethi robe as someone ducked inside the tent. The Arteths were supposed to be in solitary meditation at the moment, not idly shopping. Determined to discover which priest had disobeyed his command, Prathan strode across the path and entered the tent. It was dark inside, the thick canvas walls blocking out sunlight. A lantern burned at one side of the tent, but the large structure was so piled with boxes, barrels, and bins that Raithan could see only shadows. He stood for a moment, eyes adjusting. There didn't seem to be anyone inside the tent, not even a merchant. Sweet sands, soaps, and oils all perfumed the air, and the mixture of their many odors left the mind confused. Near the back of the tent, he found the solitary lantern sitting beside a box of ashes, the remnants of burned incense. Prathan pulled off his gauntlet, then reached to rub the soft powder between his fingers.
The ashes are like the wreckage of your power, are they not, Raithan?
A shadowed figure stood in the tent behind him, a familiar form in Dorethi robes.
What are you doing here?
Prathan turned from Dilov and brushed off his hand, then replaced his gauntlet. Dilov didn't respond. He stood in the darkness, his unseen face unnerving in its stare.
Dilov, I asked you a question.
You have failed here, Raythan. The fool Telrai is playing with you. You, a Giorn of Shudereth. Men do not make demands of the Fjordel Empire, Raythan. They should not.
What know you of such things? Leave me be, Arthas.
You were close, I admit. But your foolishness cost you the victory.
Bah!
Raythan brushed past the small man in the darkness, walking toward the exit.
My battle is far from over. I still have time left.
Do you?
Out of the corner of his eye, Raythan saw Diloph approach the ashes, running his fingers through them.
It has all slipped away, hasn't it, Raythan? My victory is so sweet in the face of your failure.
Victory? What victory have you achieved? What?
Diloph smiled. The expression, filled with the passion, the ambition, and the zeal that Raythan had noted on that first day so long ago, was so disturbing that Raythan's question died on his lips. In the flickering light, the Arteth seemed not a man at all, but a Svrakis, sent to torment Raythan. Diloph dropped his handful of ashes, then walked past Raythan, throwing open the tent flap and striding out into the light.
Diloph? What victory?
Ow!
Galadon stuck the needle into Raoden's cheek.
Stop whining.
Karate's much better at this.
Raoden sat before a mirror in their rooms at Roile's mansion, his head cocked to the side, watching Galadon sew the sword wound.
Well, wait until we get back to Elantris then.
No, I've waited too long already. I can feel this one ripping a little bit each time I smile. Why couldn't she have hit me on the arm?
Because we're Elantrin, Sul. If a bad thing can happen to us, it will. You're lucky to escape with only this. In fact, you're lucky you were even able to fight at all with that body of yours.
It wasn't easy. That's why I had to end it so quickly.
Well, you fight better than I expected.
I had Eondel teach me, back when I was trying to find ways to prove that my father's laws were foolish. Eondel chose fencing because he thought it would be the most useful to me as a politician. I never figured I'd end up using it to keep my wife from slicing me to pieces.
Galadon stabbed Raoden again. The doors were all bolted tightly, and the drapes closed, for Raoden had needed to drop his illusionary mask to let Galadon sew. The Duke had been kind enough to board them. Roile seemed to be the only one of Raoden's former friends who was intrigued rather than annoyed by his Kalu personality.
All right, Sul.
Galadon tugged the final stitch. Raoden nodded, looking at himself in the mirror. He had almost begun to think that the handsome Duladan face belonged to him. That was dangerous. He had to remember that he was still an Elantrian, with all the weaknesses and pains of his kind, despite the unconcerned personality he had adopted. Galadon still wore his mask. The Aeon illusions were good, as long as Raoden left them alone. Whether they were drawn in air or in mud, Aeons could be destroyed only by another Elantrian. The books claimed that an Aeon inscribed in dust would continue to function even if the pattern was scuffed or erased. The illusions were attached to their underclothes, allowing them to change outfits each day without needing to redraw the Aeon. Galadon's illusion was that of a nondescript, broad-faced doula, an image Raoden had found at the back of his book.
How's my personality? Am I convincing?
I wouldn't have believed you were a doula, but they seem to. I don't think you could have made a better choice anyway, Golo.
Raoden nodded as he began to draw the Aeon to reestablish his illusion.
I think Serene's suspicious.
And the magnificent Kalu returns!
Please, Sul, not in private. I come close enough to strangling you in public.
Raoden pulled on his green gloves. Articles that held the illusion that made his arms seem non-Elantrian.
Ah! What a life! Loved by all women, envied by every man.
Loved by all of the women but one, you mean?
Well, she did invite me to spar with her anytime I wanted.
Even if it was just to get another chance to impale you.
You should be glad she hit you on the face where the illusion covered the wound. If she'd stabbed through your clothing, it would have been very difficult to explain why your cut didn't bleed, Golo.
Tell me this. Why is it that every time I meet her, Serenia is determined to hate me?
Must be love.
Well, at least this time it's Kalu she hates, rather than the real me. Suppose I can forgive her for that. I've almost gotten to the point where I hate him too.
Galadon looked at Raoden, and he nodded. Their costumes and faces were complete. Galadon, playing the part of a servant, walked over and unlocked the door. Roile stood outside.
Ah, my lord! I trust your day has been as fine as my own.
It has, Citizen Kalu. May I come in?
Certainly, certainly. It is, after all, your house. We are so unspeakably indebted to your kindness that I know I shall never manage to repay you.
Nonsense, citizen. Though, speaking of payments, you will be pleased to know that I made a good trade on those lamp mounts you gave me. I deposited your credit in an account at my bank. It should be enough to see that you live comfortably for several years at least.
Excellent! We shall immediately seek another place to reside.
No. Stay here as long as you wish. I get so few visitors in my old age that even this small house often seems too large.
Then we shall stay as long as you suffer us.
Please, tell me, citizen, where did you find a dozen lamp mounts made of solid gold?
Family heirlooms. I pried them off our mansion walls even as the people burned it down.
It must have been horrible.
Worse than horrible. But those times are over now, my lord. I have a new country and new friends. You shall become my family now.
Roile nodded absently, then shot wary eyes back at Galadon.
I see something occupies your mind, Lord Roile. Fear not to speak it. Good Dendo has been with me since I was born. He is worthy of any man's trust.
I do not mention the harsh times in your homeland indiscriminately, citizen. You said they are over now, but I fear for us the terror is just beginning.
Ah, you speak of the problems with the throne.
Yes, citizen. Telrai is not a strong leader. I fear Eirilan will soon fall to Duladel's fate. We have Fjordel wolves nipping at us, smelling blood, but our nobility pretends to see nothing more than favored hounds.
Oh, troubled times. Where can I go to find peace?
Sometimes we must make our own peace, citizen.
What do you mean?
Citizen, I hope I do not injure you when I point out that the others see you as rather frivolous.
I hope they see me that way, my lord. I should hate to think I've been playing the fool for nothing.
I sense a wit in you that is not completely masked by your foppishness, citizen. Tell me, how did you manage to escape from Duladin?
I am afraid that is one secret which must remain untold, my lord. There are those who would suffer dearly if their part in my escape became known.
I understand. The important part is that you survived when your countrymen did not. Do you know how many refugees came up through the border when the Republic fell?
I'm afraid not, my lord. I was a little busy at the time.
None. Not a single one that I know of. Yourself excluded. I hear that the Republicans were too shocked to even think of escaping.
My people are slow to act, my lord. In this case, our lax manner proved our downfall. The revolution rolled over us while we were still discussing what to have for dinner.
But you escaped.
I escaped?
You have already been through what we might have to suffer, and that makes your advice valuable, no matter what the others may think.
There is a way to escape Duladel's fate, my lord, though it could be dangerous. It would involve a change in leadership.
Roile's eyes narrowed knowingly, and he nodded. Something passed between them, an understanding of the Duke's offer, and Raoden's willingness.
You speak of dangerous things.
I have been through a lot, my lord. I would not be averse to a little more danger if it provided me a means of living the rest of my life in peace.
You know the house of the merchant Kaian?
Yes.
Meet me there tonight at sunset. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Of course, my lord.
As the door shut, Raoden winked at Galadon.
And you thought I couldn't do it.
I'll never doubt you again.
The secret was Roile, my friend. He sees through most facades, but unlike Serini, his primary question is not, why is this man trying to fool me, but how can I make use of what he knows? I gave him hints and he responded.
Well, you're in. Now what will you do?
Find a way to put Roile on the throne instead of Tel-Rai.
Raoden picked up a cloth and a jar of brown makeup. He smeared some of the makeup on the cloth, then tucked the cloth in his pocket. Galadon raised an eyebrow.
And what is that?
Something I hope I won't have to use.